The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, the talk station.
Good evening and welcome to a very special Ballistic Radio brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Visit them online at kylesgunshop.com. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Coasting with me this evening, Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
I'm a little depressed.
You're a little depressed?
Yes.
It's because our football team lost.
Again.
Well, I'm used to it at this point, dude, and you're like, what, a million years older than I am, yeah. So you should be all sorts of used to it.
I'm shopping for a new team next year.
No.
Yeah.
No, I love them whether or not they win or lose. So anyway, Bengals lost. No surprise, but hey, 3 years in a row into the playoffs is a lot better than what I grew up with. So
at least they're consistent, though.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, we got that first game down. Anyway, we've got a really, really, really cool show tonight. We're going to have Lieutenant Colonel Freddie Blish, U.S. Marine Corps retired, joining us, talking about red dot sites and their development history and maybe where they're headed in the future. He was instrumental in all sorts of things that everyone does these days, and we're going to get to hear a little bit of the why. Also, very pleased to announce we are going to be broadcast in the Phoenix, Arizona market now on KFNX AM, 1100 AM. They are going to be broadcasting Ballistic Radio at 7 p.m. Mountain Standard Time. So if you're listening in Arizona over the radio and you would like to get a hold of us, you better call before you're hearing it on the radio in Arizona. But it's a start. My plans are proceeding rather nicely.
Yes.
Today, Phoenix, tomorrow, the world, something. Anyway, I'm in a goofy mood because apparently no one knows how to drive in the rain, and I made it here barely. So Eric was sad, though. He was thinking he might get to host some of the show. Anyway, so let's talk about the Salient Mark 25 Tier 1 prototype real quick before we get Colonel Blish on the line. The gun made it to 25,054 rounds.
Wow.
One malfunction the entire test, which was due to that recoil spring. I shot it off of sandbags after 25,000 rounds, and the smallest group I shot was 1 inch at 25 yards. And that was with a flyer that if you remove the flyer, it would have been a half-inch group. I'm
awesome.
Yeah, incredibly impressed. So the other cool thing is that if you are interested in the Salient and you would like to buy it, Cry Precision is actually going to be auctioning off the gun, all the support gear that I used, including the magazines, and maybe some ammo, too, at SHOT Show this year. All the benefits, all the proceeds are going to go to benefit the unit scholarship foundation. I'm saying that wrong because I didn't put it in my notes. And also the Navy SEAL Foundation. Hey, it's going to charities where they actually use the money for what they say they're going to use it for, unlike some other military charities, Wounded Warrior. Anyway, I went there. I do that a lot.
It's good to go there.
Yes, yes. Anyway, let's get Colonel Blish on the line real quick and let him talk about all that stuff because I know you all are tired of me. Colonel, are you there?
Hi, I'm here, John. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Thank you so much for joining us this evening and taking the time out of your Sunday. I certainly, certainly appreciate it. So,
well, thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, no problem. And I was talking with Sean the other day, by the way. He said hello. So,
good.
He should be back in town at some point. Anyway, for those that don't know, do you mind getting into your background just a little bit, sir?
Not a problem. Served in the Marine Corps for 24 years, 21 years active duty, and three in the IRR while I was in college. I attended the nation's oldest private military college, Norwich, Vermont, Norwich University in Northfield, Vermont, I should say. After I retired from the Marine Corps, I was the director of military business development for Aimpoint for 4 years. Then went over to government sales for LaRue for a year and a half, and then did a short time with SOC on a State Department contract for a little bit. Now I'm the general manager for Robar, which people are familiar with. Jeff Cooper, Gunsight. Well, Robbie Barkman, who is the owner of Robar, was the first gunsmith at Gunsight, and then after he left from Gunsight and established his own gunsmithing school or gunsmithing business down in Phoenix, he then also began doing a lot of firearm metal refinishing, and it was and still is really the leader in doing metal refinishing of firearms. And so, really happy to be friends with Robbie and working for Robar currently.
Well, hey, that's great. It sounds like you've been involved in the industry one way or another for quite some time now. For those that are not familiar with the concept, some of the listeners are new to firearms. What is a red dot sight? We've got about 2.5 minutes left right now, so.
A red dot sight is actually, in a more scientific term, is a collimator sight. And they've been around since World War One. The artillery, U.S. military artillery used it during World War One. Now, it was used again on both howitzers and mortars. It wasn't until the early 1970s, and specifically the Suntay Raid, where the U.S. Special Forces went in to rescue American POWs, and they were using a single point. It was single point being a company that was out of the United Kingdom, and that was the name of their site as well, and that's was literally the first red dot sight that was used in small arms. And they used it to great effect. That eventually kind of became the Armisen OEG, and then Trigicon eventually adopted it into the ACOGS. But it's its genesis really is with the single point. Aim point began development in 1973, and in 1975 began producing and then selling sights. And then Delta Force began using them in the late 80s, the old 2000s, as a matter of fact, the Model 2000. They used that in the Model 5000s, both in the rescue of CIA operative during Just Cause, and then also during the attempt to capture Adid in Mogadishu. And then the Rangers, of course, saw the guys at Delta using the aim points. They began adopting it, and it wasn't long before Big Army adopted aim points throughout the entire Army.
Great. And we'll actually talk about that in a second. I've got fond memories of the Comp M2. But we've got to go to commercial right now.
Yeah.
So when we get back, we'll talk a little bit more with Lieutenant Colonel Blish about Red Dot Optics, some of their benefits, and some more cool things that you may not know about them. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Look at Eric messing up my bumper music. What's up, dude?
I could sing.
You could sing. Kumbaya. Oh, wait, no.
Oh, no.
Man, he turned off Costa last week and Sean Nelson. Now he's not playing my tunes.
You're not using pain compliance on him.
I'm sad. Go paint him orange. See, he doesn't know what the significance of that is.
Oh.
The nice OC. Anyway, back to the point of the show. And see, I'm doing my intros wrong too, because anyway. If you're just joining us in Phoenix, you are listening on KFNX 1100 AM. Right now, we're talking with Lieutenant Colonel Blish about Red Dot sites and their history and use. We're going to get Colonel Blish back on the line. Sir, are you still there?
I'm still here, John.
Excellent. I'm sorry that my producer is not playing the awesome music that I know was the only reason you said you'd come on the show, was so you'd hear cool tunes.
I'm completely disappointed. It may prevent me from returning.
Oh, no. That's terrible. terrible. If it makes you feel any better, sir, he did it to Chris Costa last week, too. He actually cut his...
Chris is a Coast Guard guy, so he'll accept that.
I don't know, though. He's getting all Hollywood and stuff. Chris is a cool
Chris
dude.
Chris is a good guy.
Oh, yeah, he is. It's a better dude than everyone gives him credit for. I don't know what the big deal is. Anyway, that's not what this show is about. So we were talking about Red Dot sites and their adoption by Big Army after Delta was using them and then the Rangers and all that.
Yeah.
So why don't you talk about the M68 and its development? You were actually part of that program, or did I make that up?
No. It goes much further back than when I, came on board at any point, but I was definitely involved in developing the business for the new M68 CCOs that are in current use by the U.S. military. The M68 CCO, or close combat optic, it started out actually as the Comp M, back in the late 1990s. And the Army, after some successful use with it, realized that, it would be good to, maybe make this a general issue optic. And they also wanted some improvements to it. So originally, the Army had bought 100,000 of the Comp M sites, but its downside, or its distractor, if you will, at that time, had like a 1,000-hour battery life. What's 1,000 hours? 1,000 hours of constant use, you're looking at roughly 40 days. So it's not really a lot of time, especially, you're using this in a constant environment, in a combat, combat field environment, so there's a lot of batteries that have to, be required. So they had asked Aimpoint to do some further development, improve it. They did. That was the Comp M2, and they went from 1,000 hours to 10,000 hours. Very great optic at that time. This is, back in 2000. And the Comp M2, on setting 7 of 10, you could, leave it on for 10,000 hours. Well, what's 10,000 hours? 24 times 7, or basic 24 times 365 days comes out to like 8,700 something hours. So basically, you could leave it on for a full year. Mm-hmm. And that's important, because it pretty much would be the duration of a deployment. But the problem was on setting 7, unless you were, in the morning, late afternoon, evening hours, setting 7 was very visible, but during the bright day in the desert, you'd have to probably run it up around setting 9 or 10. Now your battery life is going to be diminished. Instead of lasting a year, it's probably going to last maybe, 3 or 4 months.
Right.
So the Comp M2, while a very capable site, still had some limitations. It was a very durable site, other than the only other limitation with the Comp M2 was the switch knob. I don't want to say it was fragile, because it wasn't. It was more rugged than that, but it could be there was a roll pin that usually could snap, and then the switch knob would fall off. You could still adjust the brightness without the knob, but it wasn't lead people to have a sense of confidence
right.
In that regard, and then that was back and then in 2006 the Army competed for a new M68 CCO, and at this point now EOTech was in the picture, And they competed for it. They were looking for an optic that would use a AA battery so that it would have a battery that would be very easy to source, because the one-third ends that were used by the Comp-Ms, Comp-M2s, and even the Comp-M3s, which had improved the LED technology where it went from 10,000 hours to 50,000 hours, or over 5 years of battery life. Well, the Army still wanted to have a red dot sight, although the EOTech really isn't a red dot sight, it's a holographic sight. But bottom line, they wanted a combat optic, close combat optic, that would be that would use a AA battery. Easy to source, common, able to find it pretty much in the world. So at any point, that's when they developed both the Comp M4 and the Comp M4S at the same time. And it's a real interesting story, as it was relayed to me, that the when the Army selected the Comp M4, the troops really wanted the Comp M4S. And the difference is your battery box on the Comp M4 sits at the 1 o'clock position. If you were looking at the ocular lens of the optic, as a clock, at 1 o'clock the battery box would be up there. Where typically the standard position is for like a Comp M2 or Comp M3 is. But they wanted the Comp M4S, which meant that the battery box is in the 5 o'clock position, to lower the profile of the optic, less likely for the switch knob to get shifted from one setting to another, things like that. But the program manager, he was, out the door, last minute, which one are we going to choose, sir? And he said, where's the battery box? Where's the battery location on the Comp M2 at? And he didn't even know. Yeah. And they said, well, it's at the 1 o'clock position. Well, that's the one we're going to take then. Even though the troops had done all the testing on one of the Comp M4S. And so the Army ended up buying 383,000 Comp M4s just based on that one decision. It's still a great optic, nothing wrong with it. Very, very rugged, incredibly rugged. It's built like a Russian tank. It has 16 settings, and on setting 12 of 16, which is still a very usable daylight setting, even in on a bright day at noon, you could still see it, and it will last basically the life of the battery. The advanced circuitry technology Aimpoint developed is very much patent protected. That they use in the light emitting diode is so efficient that on setting 12 of 16 with a Comp M4 or a Comp M4S, you can take the battery, put it in the sight, turn it on setting 12, take another battery that was made that same day, leave it in its package, and put them side by side, and the two of them will go dead roughly at the same time, because a battery that sits in its package is discharging energy as it sits there unused.
Right.
Well, the light emitting diode in the Comp M4, Comp M4S, and even in the micro series sites uses less energy than the battery will discharge sitting unused on a shelf. So it's a really phenomenal optic. Incredibly well made, very, very rugged. It's a very, very, very good combat optic. And my personal preference of all the Comp-M series sights is a Comp-M 4S. I like the battery box in a lower location myself. Some people like the Comp-M 4 with the battery box at the 1 o'clock. It really, at that point, becomes a personal preference, but I like the lower profile of the Comp-M 4S.
Right.
That's, personal preference for me.
Well, and I actually ended up going with one of the H1 micros, just because I've got mine on an SBR, which we got about 2 minutes left. Brings up an interesting point. So as far as red dots go, the advantages are that you've got parallax free aiming. You can target focus and not be hard focused on your sighting system, so you can actually see what you're shooting at a little bit easier, and also you can do that with both eyes open. As far as the application of the red dots, I mean, rifles only, shotguns, I mean, I know they're going on pistols. What What are your thoughts on that in about a minute and a half?
Every weapon platform that they're out there, you know, there's really no limitation. I have a Comp M3, you know, I have a Comp C3 that I run on a 22 long rifle, Tactical Solutions 22 long rifle. I've got a Comp M4, Comp M4S, and I probably have a half a dozen Micro T1s and one Micro H1. Again, that I use on actually use that on a shotgun, on a, you know, on a 12 gauge combat shotgun.
Right.
I see no limitation. The micros, that's one of the things I love about the micro. I really think the micro is probably the best optic currently manufactured by Aimpoint because of its versatility. I can use it on everything: handguns, carbines, rifles. I've shot out to easily 500 yards with a 5.56, you know, LaRue Tactical stealth rifle, and with the LaRue Tactical Texas Ranger rifle, which was a 14.5-inch 308 that was built for the Texas Rangers with a micro T1 on it, and that's with a 4 MOA dot, I might add. Literally was hitting a man-sized, you know, Echo Silhouette man-sized steel target at 800 yards. So, it, you know, there is no, you know, range limitation with using them,
right.
You know, a red dot sight. But you do need to know your holdovers. And I would tell you that, you know, threat identification, 800 yards.
Different thing,
you know,
entirely.
Different thing. That's a different thing. Being able to hit something is one thing. Doing positive target identification is another.
Well, and that's actually, I'm going to interrupt real quick because we have to go to break, but we'll talk about that when we get back. When we come back from break, more with Lieutenant Colonel Blish. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. Hey, Seven Dust, good choice. So, anyway, we are talking with Lieutenant Colonel Blish about Red Dot Optics, their development, history, and use. If you have any questions, you can call us 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. We'll try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we're able. Also, if you're listening on KFNX in Phoenix, you guys are about an hour behind when the show's actually being broadcast, so unless you want to call in and tell Eric that he's doing a wonderful job, you probably just don't want to call in. Anyway, back to our guest. Sir, are you still there?
I'm still here, John.
Excellent. So, we were talking about red dot sights, and actually, we had just gotten on to the micros, and we were discussing range and reticle size and all that. Now, you brought up an interesting point that I'd kind of like to touch on. It's semi red dot optics related, but I bet you'll do okay. You mentioned target identification and how important that is. And I've noticed a trend lately, and I apologize to the listeners. This is off of the outline that we came up with, but I wanted to bring it up. I've noticed a trend lately where people don't seem as concerned about that as maybe they should be. You hear a lot of people like, well, I've got night sights on my gun. I don't have a light. Or, well, I can make a shot out to 500 or 600 yards. Well, can you see who it is? Now, I'm curious your general thoughts on that topic real quick.
You have to break it down into several categories. If I'm in the military, positive target identification at one point was not as critical, say, as it is now. And when I was part of OIF-1 and we were rolling through Iraq, liberating Iraq, you know, if that person, you know, was a threat, just like when I was in Panama, same thing. We felt that that person was a threat to us or to our fellow Marines or, you know, was trying to flank our position, we engaged them. But now rules of engagement are much more stringent. Even in Afghanistan, you have to positively identify, you know, hey, is that an AK in their hands or a broom? You know, it's not that it's a bad thing, but it does mean that you have greater limitations. And that's why, like, the aim points, which are great sites, as, you know, and you have those special units that use EOTEX, they're great for 0 to 200 meters. Inside 200 meters, you can easily do positive identification, you know, with your eyeballs without magnification. Whereas when you get beyond 200 meters, having some form of magnification for positive identification is very important. Now, for civilian and law enforcement use here, it would be very difficult, I think, for anybody to be able to justify using a carbine or a rifle beyond 50 yards. You'd have to really be able to designate or describe, you know, that the threat was that serious that you had to engage somebody, you know, beyond that kind of distance, I think. Not to say that there aren't circumstances where that wouldn't be the case, but I think you would be hard-pressed, and I think it'd be even more difficult beyond 200 yards for sure. So positive identification is really important, that they're a threat, where you brought up the point about white lights, and that's, you know, absolutely correct. I mean, if you're using a red dot sight, you're using it because it gives you greater effectiveness and greater efficiency, you know, when using your carbine or shotgun or handgun, engaging a target or a threat. But that doesn't mean that you still don't have to have some form of positive identification. And I think really for law enforcement with a patrol rifle, again, it depends upon their jurisdiction. If they're out in the rural areas, then maybe having a magnified optic to be able to identify threats at longer distances might be necessary. But honestly, most law enforcement officers would be perfectly fine with a post-combat optic because, again, you know, they have to be able to justify why did you engage that suspect, you know, at the distances
right.
that, you know, you did. And also the mean average, I mean, the mean average law enforcement sniper engagements is 50 yards.
Right.
The longest is 550 yards. But when you have snipers, law enforcement snipers are literally their average distance of engagement is 50 yards. You know, engaging somebody with a patrol rifle beyond that is going to be few and far between.
Right.
Now, there is a documentation of a Maine State Trooper that using his .870 with an aim point on it engaged an individual at 90 yards with a slug and took that person out. That person, you know, was shooting at him from his front porch, you know, with a bolt action 30-06, and the trooper, all he had was a shotgun with slugs, and thankfully he had his aim point on it because it was at night, and, you know, he gave him an ounce of retribution.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Very good job saying that in a politically correct way. You can pretty much actually say almost anything you want as long as it's not one of the George Carlin's seven words, apparently. Hey, we've got a caller, sir. If you don't, do you mind taking a call real quick?
Not at all.
We got about 4 minutes before the break. We've actually got Ray from Phoenix, has a question about the Aimpoint Pro series. And let's make sure I don't hang up on you while I get Ray on the line. Ray, are you there, sir?
Yeah, I am, John. How you doing? Welcome to Phoenix.
Hey, thank you very much. I'm you're listening like telepathically, or I would assume via the internet, since we're not broadcasting there and for another 24 hour and 20 minutes. Anyway, I appreciate you calling in tonight and listening to the show. What's your question, sir?
Wanted to see what the thought was when the Aimpoint came out with the Aimpoint Pro, which I think was a great addition to the line.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. The Aimpoint Pro is very similar in capability to the Comp M3. It has some slightly reduced battery life, 30,000 hours by 50,000 hours, so you're still talking well over 3 years of continuous use on setting 7. Again, it has 10 settings, just like the Comp M2 and the Comp M3, but setting 7, that's where you get your 30,000 hours of battery life. But it's a very good optic. And what Aimpoint was thinking in that regard was EOTech was providing and selling optics that were oftentimes $100 to $200 less than an Aimpoint. And Aimpoint, while, again, a biased opinion because I did work for Aimpoint, and I do believe they are a more durable, more reliable product, but EOTech is still not a bad product. And because they were, priced less, a lot of law enforcement officers and law enforcement agencies were selecting, EATECs from just a budget standpoint. And so by introducing an optic that was going to be able to match EATEC on a price point and create a more level playing field on the law enforcement side of the house was a very smart move on Aimpoint's perspective. And then it became a very popular optic outside of law enforcement with civilians and others that currently use it.
So, yeah, it's great. It's nice to have it all integrated as well, and saving a couple hundred bucks always helps.
That's exactly right, because that was the other complaint, was that people would buy the aim points, and then they were perplexed by what mounts to buy. A good quality one from LaRue, would be the recommendation most people go with. There's others out there, American Defense, Machine, ADM. Robo, others, but most people not really attuned to the industry would know that, and so they would kind of vapor lock, as far as like, oh, if I got to buy this site, now I got to buy a mount, and the EATEC, oh, I just put on my gun. So, yeah.
And the other interesting thing I found about the Pro, at least, we got about a minute left, and I'll share my opinion because I know everyone cares, is the fact that they actually put the clear lens cover on the rear, the solid one on the front. You can use it as a occluded optic if you need to, which from the standpoint of something getting stored in a cruiser, I thought was really cool.
Yeah, that was a really, another good idea that they had. And that's how a collimator sight actually works. That was like the single points and the OEGs is that, the way the fiber optic or the tritium in those particular optics illuminates, you can't see through the sight. You're looking at, the dot. But you should be fighting both eyes open. That was, I would see people shooting aim points or EOTECs with an eye closed, and I'm like,
no.
Would you get in a fist fight with one of your eyes closed?
You wouldn't start that way, probably.
Then why would I get in a firefight with an eye closed? I want both eyes open for total situational awareness. And what's neat about that concept is that, if I do, again, you pull it out of your cruiser, you don't have time to flip open the front cap, you can still engage targets, as long as you're shooting with both eyes open. Now, having said that,
I actually need to interrupt real quick because we have to go to break. Ray, I'm going to put you on hold. Sir, I'm going to put you on hold. We'll talk a little bit more about this when we get back. Right now, we're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Visit them online, kylesgunshop.com. And hey, I just checked out their website. They've got the Aimpoint Pro on there, 8 of them left at the minimum price. Aimpoint will let them sell those at. So hey, hard to beat one of those for $400. Anyway, we were talking with Lieutenant Colonel Freddie Blish about red dot sights and all that. We have Ray on the line from Arizona. He was kind enough to call in with a question. If you would like to get on the line and ask a question of the Colonel, 513-749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. We're close enough to Kentucky. I should probably specify that when I say the Colonel, I don't mean Colonel Sanders, shouldn't I? As much as I like chicken. Anyway.
You're making me hungry. Stop that.
Oh, that's it. Sir, are you still there?
I'm still here, sir.
Excellent. Let me get Ray back on the line real quick and just make sure we answered his question, then we will move forward. Ray, are you still there?
I am.
Excellent. So, sorry to cut you off there at the break and all that, and I didn't want to hang up, but does that answer your question? Or?
Yep, it sure does. And you ought to come down to Phoenix to do next week. It's going to be a lot warmer here than it will be there.
Oh, well, I was just discussing over the break how we were going to work that, because we've got Pat Rogers coming on next week, and then it occurred to me I'm actually going to be in Vegas, so might actually be a pre-recorded show, or I might call in to interview the call-in. I don't know. We'll see what Andy's up to. But hey, I appreciate you listening from Phoenix and calling in tonight. Really do appreciate it, sir.
All right, thanks a lot. Great show.
Hey, thanks. Have a good night.
Hey, thank you, Ray.
All right.
I was just wrapping up before the break, and that what I was saying was when shooting occluded eye, what I have found is roughly when in training people that typically 10 to 20% of the students will have some difficulty shooting occluded eye, where, you know, most can shoot point of aim, point of impact, shooting occluded eye, and then that 10 or 20% will oftentimes be, you know, if they're right-handed, you know, their rounds will impact typically, you know, between 6 inches to a foot left of where their point of aim is supposed to be. And it has to do, I think, with cross dominance of, it might be right-handed, but strong, you know, their left eye is their strong eye, or maybe they're left-handed and their right eye is a strong eye. But there is a bit of, it doesn't work for just everybody unless they, you know, they put some, you know, some time behind it training-wise, you know, that to practice shooting occluded eye.
Right.
Yeah. And
it was just something I noticed, just because that was the way I always, when I was teaching rifle or whatever, the way I'd get people to keep both eyes open with a red dot would be just put the
flip it down.
Yep. Yeah, put the lens cap over the front of it. So
that's exactly it. Yep.
I guess real quick, and then we will move on to some other stuff. As far as I know, red dots are getting to be pretty popular on pistols and all that. Just in general, where do you think the technology is headed as far as the future of the optics goes?
Yeah, absolutely. I think where we are with pistols right now as far as optics is where I saw us, you know, 10, 12 years ago, actually 14 years ago, with carbines and rifles. As a matter of fact, I mean, I was not a believer in using any battery-powered optic on a carbine until, you know, Pat Rogers, who's my carbine mentor. I did a 223 carbine class at Gunsight, and Pat had just finished training Det 1 for the Marine Corps, and here I was, just adamantly opposed to running an aim point on a, you know, I was running iron sights, and during the night shoot where I found that, you know, I was really hindered by not having a red dot sight in the night shoot, and you know, Pat finally called me out. He goes, "Look, Freddie," he goes, "do you carry spare batteries for, you know, flashlights, other things?" "Yeah, absolutely." He goes, "Why wouldn't you carry spare batteries for an aim point? Why are you worried about batteries failing on an aim point?" Granted, this is the comp in 2 days, but now, I mean, yeah, I tell people put a fresh battery in and carry a spare.
Right. And don't feel bad. See, I forgot my glass of water tonight, and it's everything I can do to not...
I'm recovering from what I think is pre-shot show crud.
Oh.
And I'm hoping that I don't pick anything up from the many people traveling from around the world that go there.
Yeah.
But,
no, it's actually going to be my first show, so I'm curious to see what kind of illness I come back with.
don't
bring some
me.
Hand sanitizer. It helps minimize it a little bit.
Yes. Yeah.
What we're seeing on the pistols, though, is just, like you said, the miniature red dot sights. And right now, currently, the Trijicon RMR is probably the best for handguns right now.
Right.
The in-point micro being probably the most durable, but unfortunately, it's a little too big for most people to use, carry concealed. The RMR is probably better in that suit. The loophole delta point is catching up. They're putting a lot of R&D work into improving the G-shock load.
And I actually had one of those and broke mine. I know Andy's got one on his carry gun right now and loves it.
I run it and it has not failed me yet. So
yeah,
the delta point has a little better lens. My only detractor with both of them is they both have open emitters,
right?
Meaning that any dirt or debris could get in front of the emitter and that blocks it from reaching the screen. It's really a minor issue. I don't think it's something that would prevent me from carrying it, but it's something you just have to be aware of. Basically.
You must have to be able to default back to your backup iron sights. If you're not training to do that, you could be in trouble.
That's right.
And someone brought this up online, and I kind of expanded upon it. I really think it'll be interesting when we see the first pistol that is designed from the ground up to be to have a red dot optic as the primary sighting system. When you start to see one where maybe the top of the slide does not reciprocate, kind of like the Ruger's 10-22s don't, you know, but hadn't happened yet in a service pistol. So out of curiosity, sir, we'll kind of switch gears just a little bit. Now, You're working with Robar now and all that. I wanted to give you some time. Do you guys have any projects upcoming or anything that you want to discuss in the last couple minutes of the show?
We do, actually. Robbie Barkman had trained under Gail McMillan as far as building precision rifles, and matter of fact, one of the first 50 caliber sniper rifles used by the Marine Corps over in Desert Shield, Desert Storm was made by Robar. And the Coast Guard still uses Robar built 50 cals for boat interdiction, small boat interdiction. They use them to shoot out the engines on small boats. And then he was also very well known for building really precise bolt action rifles for law enforcement agencies. And that market had kind of declined in the last few years. And one of the things I did when I came on board was recognize the fact that there still is a need for bolt actions in law enforcement work. But the problem is that they want a monolithic chassis system so they can run night vision with their day optic.
Right.
And so we have partnered with Modular Driven Technologies out of Canada, and we're building our what we call the SR-21 or Sniper Rifle 21st Century SR-21, and using the Modular Driven Technologies Stack 21 chassis. And it's we did a soft introduction of it, if you will, at the Small Arms Review Show in Phoenix at the beginning of December, and we'll do the full introduction at NRA. And we're really looking forward to that. We've done some testing with it. We actually ran two of them through one of Mike Lamb, Stoic Ventures precision rifle classes, and we're shooting them 308s with 175 grain, both Black Hills and Federal Gold Medal match, out to 1,400 yards, and
nice.
And getting 80% hits on an IPSC size steel target at 1,400 yards for the 308.
And that's pretty incredible, considering 1,400 yards is considered to be beyond the range of the 308. That's actually really impressive too. So when are people going to be able to get those, do you figure?
We're already taking orders for them. We'll have the SR-21s there at SHOT Show for those who'd like to come by and take a look at it. We'll be in booth 4443. 4443. And the other thing that we'll be introducing is a signature 1911. Robar has been building 1911s, including Thunder Ranch models, for years, but we're actually going to be building our own signature rifle, or pistol, I should say, our own signature 1911 pistols. But what's going to be a little bit unique about this is that working with Unity Tactical, Trent Zimmer at Unity Tactical, we have the prototype Atom adapter plates for Series 70 slides.
Nice. And that'll be a way to mount red dots to the slides. And
absolutely. You'll be able to buy a Robar 1911 signature pistol with a standard slide with standard iron sights and buy a second slide that will have the, whatever particular, miniature red dot slide on you want.
Well, hey, I got to cut you off because it's time to go, but I appreciate you coming on tonight, sir. Next week, we're going to be talking with legendary firearm trainer Pat Rogers about the AR platform, fighting pistols, and war stories. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m.